Well, we're going to continue our journey through the Gospel of John this morning, and today we pick up in chapter 2. And so if you want to turn to chapter 2, we're going to read through a different account. Again, something new that happens in the Gospel of John this morning, and that Jesus does in a new way that we can look at Jesus. So we're going to start to read beginning in chapter 2, verse 1, and it'll be up on the screen, but if you have your Bibles, open them up and keep them open during the message, because we'll be looking back at our passage this morning. But allow me to read what God's Word says here this morning. John says, "On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus also was invited to the wedding with his disciples. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to them, 'They have no wine.' And Jesus said to her, 'Woman, what does this have to do with me? My hour has not yet come.' His mother said to the servants, 'Do whatever he tells you.'" Isn't that great motherly advice? Do whatever God tells you. All right. Anyway, now there were 6 stone water jars there for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the feast." So they took it. When the master of the feast tasted the wine now become wine, he did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. The master of the feast called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first, and when the people have drunk freely, then the poor wine. But you have kept the good wine until now. This is the first of his signs Jesus did at Cana in Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and his brothers and his disciples, and they stayed there for a few days." All right, so this is a really cool story, and probably a lot of you heard about this. This is Jesus' first miracle, and as John says, it's the first sign. Remember, we talked about these signs, these 7 signs that John includes, and these 7 signs are given for the purpose, just like the witnesses and Jesus' teaching, so that we may believe that Jesus is the Son of God, and that by believing we may find life in his name. So these signs help help give us a picture of who Jesus is as the Son of God, so that we can believe in him. And just to kind of give some context about what's happening here, again, Jesus had just started his public ministry, and last week at the end of chapter 1, we saw how Jesus began to draw followers. And as these followers, or these early disciples, began following him, and they had this interaction with Jesus, or they experienced Jesus, they couldn't help but tell other people about him, and they told other people, who then again began to follow him. And what we learn through all of this is that if Jesus is worth trusting, then he's worth sharing. So that's kind of where we are. And if you remember, Jesus then was, this was where John was baptizing and things, and then Jesus was on his way up to Galilee, which is in the northern portion of the region where the Jews lived, so up by the Sea of Galilee. And so Jesus is on his way up there. So this is where our passage opens. So let's just kind of walk through the passage so we understand what's happening, and then we're going to dig into it, because there's a lot here to kind of grasp, but we kind of need to get a grasp of what's really happening. So let's summarize the events happening here. So it says, it opens up and says, on the third day, what's it talking about? It's not the third day of the week. What John's saying is, he's setting the time. This is on the third day after he had called Nathanael and he began following him 3 days later. So this would be 7 days after John first sees Jesus and said, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." 7 days after that, so now Jesus is up in the region of Galilee, and he's in the town of Cana, or the village of Cana, which actually is Nathanael's hometown, if you remember from last week. And he's there to go to a wedding. He's been invited to a wedding along with his mom, and weddings were big deals back in that day, bigger than even they are today. And in the Jewish culture, weddings were one of the feasts that would just bring everyone together. In fact, it would bring entire families together, and oftentimes entire communities would come to these weddings, and it was a celebration of God bringing two people together and the blessing upon them. And these wedding feasts, they could go on for a day, or they could go on for a week. So people would stay for long periods of time. And somehow, the people getting married are related to Jesus and his family in the sense that they're invited to this. Jesus' mom, and we know, we see her involvement in this wedding, that she's probably, the person getting married or the person putting on the wedding is close to her because she's pretty involved in the wedding and what's going on at the time. And Jesus being invited and his disciples being invited, I mean, not only was Jesus part of that family that was from Nazareth, the city of Canaan's about 4 miles north of Nazareth, just so we can kind of set where it is, a little further west of the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus had been, not only was a part of his family that got invited, but also he was becoming a bit of a celebrity. People had heard about Jesus, so they invite Jesus and his followers. So it's kind of almost like a VIP guest coming to the wedding. So it's a big deal that Jesus is there too, and it's this big celebration. So that's what this wedding is all about. Now, anyway, at some point during this wedding feast, and it sounds like it's pretty early on, they run out of wine. And again, one of the major components of a Jewish feast was wine. And they run out. And this is a major blunder. This would be something that would be almost catastrophic in a feast like this, to run out of wine. Not only would it be seen as kind of disrespectful to the guests, but it would be embarrassing for the hosts to have this happen. So they run out of wine. And at this point, Mary finds out about it. And again, this isn't something they just, somebody like stands up in front of everybody, we're out of wine. This is something that's kind of happening behind the scenes. And Jesus, and Mary comes up to Jesus and says, hey, they're out of wine. And so Jesus answers her, and he wonders why. He says, well, what does this have to do with me? Why are you telling me this, basically? And we're going to get into that in a little bit as we dig a little deeper. But he tells her, basically, my time hasn't come yet, right? He says, this isn't about me right now. And she kind of understands that and says, you're right. But do what you want, is her attitude. And she tells the servants, hey, whatever he tells you to do, do. So if he tells you, and we don't know why she's asking. Maybe she wants him to run out and get some more wine or something. Who knows? Or she wants him to do a miracle. We're not sure. We're never told that. But anyway, she goes away and says, do whatever Jesus tells him. And Jesus instructs these servants then, who were supposed to be serving the wine. He sees these six big jugs, water containers, 20 to 30 gallons. And he says, fill them with water. And they fill it up with water. Think how much wine Jesus is making here. Think of this party. This could be as much as 180 gallons of wine, if I did math right. I think I did. Yeah. 180 gallons of wine. That's a lot of wine. But Jesus tells them to fill it up with water. And then after they fill up with water, he says, take some out and give it to the wine master. And at this point, this water becomes wine. Now, a quick note about this wine. You know, people take two extremes to this, and they say, yeah, wine, man, they're all getting partied and all this. And other people are like, this wasn't wine like we know today. This was more like grape juice. No, this is wine, okay? It might not be as strong as our wine is today, but it's still alcohol. Now, wine was a very important part of the Jewish culture and their health, because the water that they had probably wasn't as good to drink. In fact, remember Paul telling Timothy, drink some wine for your stomach. It'll help settle your stomach. So wine was kind of a staple of what they would drink. But it had alcohol in it because we know it could get you drunk. Remember, Paul says, hey, don't be drunk with wine. So you could get drunk if you drank enough wine. So this wine that Jesus makes is real wine. So real quick, a lot of people look at this miracle and they want to make it as a, this is Jesus teaching us that we should go out and party. It's okay to party and Jesus supports us drinking. Or Jesus is telling us we shouldn't, you know, and this isn't the point of this miracle. The point of this miracle is not about drinking wine. The point of this miracle is about Jesus. And that's why John is doing this miracle. if you notice, Mary isn't even named in this. It just says the mother of Jesus. The bride and groom aren't named. If it's a wedding, you would think they would be the stars of this. You know who the one named is in this? Jesus. Why? Because Jesus is the focus of this miracle. So anyway, so they get these six jugs, and they bring it to the wine master or the feast master. He's kind of like maybe the wedding coordinator or the catering coordinator that's making sure everything runs smoothly and everything's good and everything's quality. And they bring him this, and he drinks it, and he's just like, where did you get this? This is amazing. This isn't just wine. This is good wine. In fact, usually they bring out the good wine first, and you're bringing it out later. And the reason why they would bring out the good wine first, because everybody would be, because as this feast would go on and it would linger, people would get tired, people would get full. And if you've ever gotten full and you're eating real good food, the good food doesn't quite need to taste as good after a while, right? I mean, you're not really savoring it. You're just like, oh, more food or more drink. So, and also people were getting a little bit more dull of their senses as maybe the alcohol is starting to take effect in some of the people, that they wouldn't notice as much, that it didn't taste the same as the beginning one. So people would do that because it was cheaper and it was a way that they could provide more wine. But he says, this wine you gave is much better than the stuff we even had at the beginning. Whoa, that's amazing. So anyway, that's kind of what happens here. And the celebration then continues, and it actually got better, right? So after the wedding, John says that Mary and Jesus and the disciples and Jesus' brothers traveled up to Capernaum, which is further north. So they're going back, they're going further north into Galilee. And so here we have his brothers going with them, so maybe they were at the wedding. Is probably the assumption here that we get this. And Capernaum is where James and John are from, who were two of his disciples that are with him. And it's right next to, kind of just an adjacent town, kind of like Haddon Heights and Audubon, or Haddon Heights and Barrington, that is Bethsaida's right there, where Peter, Andrew, and Philip are from. So they're all right there, and they're going up to that area where they're going to stay for a few days. But John notes that they went up there, but what happens here, he kind of closes out and says, this was the first sign that Jesus performed in Cana of Galilee, or the first of these seven signs. And again, these signs are these pictures, these miracles, these supernatural acts that Jesus does to show that he is the Son of God so that we can believe in him. And by believing, we may find life in his name. So John gives these seven examples, right, that help us believe. Now, you may look at this miracle, and you may look at this and say, but this miracle really, it's not that awesome, right? I mean, it's not like he gave, I mean, some of the miracles of Jesus are amazing, right? He gives sight to the blind, he heals lepers, he raises the dead. You would think for his first miracle, there'd be something a little more spectacular than just turning water into wine. And we may look at that and say, so it doesn't seem like much, but it really is much. Again, this is the first miracle that Jesus does in public. So in a sense, what he's doing by giving this sign is he is announcing his presence. And that's what this miracle is really all about. It's about Jesus presenting himself through this miracle. And more specifically, as a sign, what Jesus is doing in here and announcing his presence is he's revealing who he is, but more importantly, in this miracle, he presents or he communicates why he has come. So everybody knows what Jesus is about. Now, again, Jesus tells his mom, my time is not yet come. It's not time for me to fully reveal my glory, but I can give you a little taste. And if you really have understanding, you're going to see it. So, what is Jesus really announcing here? Well, we need to kind of dig into the passage a little bit to understand some of the inner workings of what's going on here, why Jesus does what he does with what he does. Because remember, God never does anything by accidents or coincidence. He does things on purpose. And he does things to communicate to us. So in this miracle, on the surface, it just looks like, oh, he just turned water into wine. But there's much more here. Jesus is announcing his presence or presenting himself. So as we look closer, here are some things we discover. We actually discover four things about Jesus, or that he announces four things about himself. So through this first miracle, Jesus announces that, first of all, he came to be where the action is. And we discover this about Jesus. What is God like? You know what God is like? God loves us and wants to be where we are, right in the middle of things. You know, it's very interesting that this is Jesus' first big public gathering, right? Where all eyes are kind of on him and he takes kind of the center stage. And it's not in a church setting. It's not, you know, with the religious people, like at a religious school teaching. It's not like something ultra serious or formal. Rather, it's a party. It's a party where a crowd of people are. A wedding feast, no less, right? This is a place where people are eating, and they're laughing, and they're drinking, and they're dancing, and they're having a good time, and they're kind of being themselves, right? It was a place where everybody gathered and kind of were themselves, from the young to the old, the rich to the poor, the cultured to the uncultured. They're all there, right? And, you know, as a party, it's a place where things could get a little messy. It's a place where things could get a little wild. But yet Jesus chose here to start to reveal himself, to begin to reveal himself and who he is. So this is, and what's the big deal? Well, this is a common place where people gathered. You see, what Jesus is doing here, and this being his first thing here, because sometimes we get a picture of God and he's always, remember, God created all things, including fun and laughter and joy. And so by coming here, you know, God in the flesh, he didn't just come for the most religious or the most serious or the most cultured or the most together people in the world. Actually, Jesus came for a world that needed him most. He came for those that maybe didn't feel like they had enough, or they were hurting, or they were needy, or they were never thought, and they were just there. And Jesus came for them. As a matter of fact, Jesus came for people that were sinners, like prostitutes and tax collectors. And he was seen hanging out with these people instead of the religious elite a lot of times. Actually, one time, he's hanging with a tax collector named Zacchaeus, and he actually says this in Luke chapter 19. He says, "For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." You see, Jesus came to where the action is, or where people needed him most. The fact that he comes first to a party announces that he came to meet the world right where it is and to connect with it. And that Jesus came to meet us right where we are. You see, sometimes we think maybe that we need to clean ourselves up. You know, we need to get things right. I have a bunch of fishing friends and things like that, and I'm always inviting them out to church and saying, "Oh, you got to come out and check it out." They said, "Oh, I could never. The lightning would strike me, or I got to get myself together before I ever go there." I'm like, "No, you don't." Jesus comes to us right as we are. Remember, Paul says that. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While we were at our worst. You know, the fact that Jesus comes here, He's telling us, "Hey, I'm coming to you to meet you where you are. That's where the action is, where you need me most." And this is important not only for Jesus, it's important for us as his followers. Do you know that? We look at Jesus and we say, this is why Jesus comes, so this is one way we can reflect Jesus. And you know what that is? To go where the action is, to make sure that we are where people need to hear about Jesus. Sometimes we maybe feel safer, or we feel more content kind of in this bubble. And we just say, "Well, I'm in a great environment where everybody loves Jesus and everybody's good and nobody's really doing anything wrong, and that's awesome. And hopefully the world will come to us." That's not what God did. God became man to come and meet right where we are. And one important thing that tells us about ourselves as we follow Jesus is that we should be out there and go out into our world, meeting our coworkers, our neighbors, right where they are. And it doesn't mean we have to go and say, "I'm going to go and party right with you and, you know, do what you do." But it means that we should be able to go to our world and connect with it. You see, being in our world doesn't mean we have to be of our world. Remember, Jesus talks about that. which means that we can still be in our world and we don't have to celebrate sin to enjoy people's presence or to meet people where they are and connect with them. It doesn't mean we have to accept necessarily all that behavior. Jesus wasn't coming to this wedding saying, I'm accepting people getting drunk and falling all over themselves at this wedding. That's not why Jesus is there. Jesus is there to connect with the people who were at that wedding. Okay? And sometimes we don't want to go out into a world because we're afraid, oh, maybe I'll get dragged down into the mess. Well, Jesus had a lot of people saying that about him, but he never did. Jesus did and never sinned. He never accepted sin. Yet he was still able to love his world. And that's what we're called to do, just as Jesus did that. So, and you know why this is important? Because most people come to church, not because we have a cool website or we put things on Facebook. Most people come to church because somebody from that church has a relationship with them and invites them from that relationship. That's how most people come out to church. It's through our relationships outside of church. So we need to be out there and we need to be doing this. So what this tells us is Jesus being at this wedding, is Jesus saying about himself that he isn't some fussy, judgmental, no fun zone person. Rather, he's one who meets the world that needs him most right where they are so that he can draw them to the Father. Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? And that's what Jesus is kind of showing, being at this wedding. And this wedding was right in the heart of the action with many who needed him most. So that's one thing that we discover through this miracle of Jesus, right? This turning the water into wine. But it's also through this miracle that Jesus announces another reason why he came. And through our discourse, through this story, we discover that Jesus not only came to be where the action was, but also he came to do God's will. He came to do the will of his Father. And we see this through the interaction of his mother and him. And as we look at this, you know, even though Jesus came to meet the world at the point of need, he didn't come to bend to the winds of the world. Even though Jesus came to the world, he didn't come to the world to say, well, whatever you want, I'm going to give it to you. Jesus isn't Santa Claus. Jesus came to the world for a very specific purpose, to accomplish the Father's will. And that's what he does. At this wedding, the wine runs out, and his mom, Mary, comes to him and tells him, right? Hey, the wine ran out. And again, we're not told why she comes to him. And maybe she's just saying, you need to go out with your buddies. You can carry a lot and go find wine somewhere. But more than likely, she's probably saying, hey, why don't you do one of those God things? You know, you can do this. You're God. Plus, it'll make me kind of look awesome. So she kind of tells him, right? And the fact that Jesus does this isn't a sign that Jesus is saying, okay, mom, I'll do whatever he says. It's actually just the opposite. Because look how Jesus responds to him, responds to Mary. He says, woman, why do you tell me this? And we read this and we say, that is so disrespectful. How can he talk to his own mother like that? How can he demean her? He's not demeaning his mother here. What he's doing is he's making a distinction. And he's separating himself from Jesus the man, from Jesus God. So what he's doing by calling Mary, instead of saying mom, he's saying woman. He's not saying, oh, woman, please. He's not talking down to her. What he's saying is, he's saying, you're a person. You're a human being. Basically, I'm God. Okay? Basically, do you mean to tell me what to do? And so he's saying, basically, I'm here for a higher purpose. And then, because then he tells her, right? My time has not yet come. And what does that mean, my time has not yet come? Could it mean that Jesus is saying my time for doing miracles has not yet come? Well, it's probably not that, because he does a miracle, right? Another idea of the time of Jesus that John talks about later on is that, well, maybe it's the time that has come for Jesus to come and give this sacrifice, the reason he came, to give himself sacrifice. But it's not time for that, right? That comes later. But really, the idea that Jesus is saying is, my time has not come to fully reveal myself in glory as God in the flesh. It's not time for me to stand up and say, I'm him. But I can give you a taste. I can give you a picture. And that's what this miracle is. So this miracle isn't him bending to his mother saying, well, okay, I'll do it. It's him saying, first of all, I know you want me to do this, and that's great, but I'm God, and I'm here to do God's will, and there's something higher at stake. But it includes doing this miracle, and that's why I'm going to do it, but I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it because it's part of my purpose. So that, and Mary recognizes this. That's why she says, do whatever he tells you to do. She doesn't harp on him. She doesn't keep after him and say, you know, you have to do this and things like that. Rather, she just says, whatever he tells you to do, do. But what Jesus is saying here, basically about himself, is he's saying, I'm not here for man. I'm here for God's will. I'm here to accomplish God's will. I'm here to do something spiritual, bigger than just what you want. I'm here to give you what you need. And he's saying, so I'm come to do God's will. In fact, this is what Jesus says later on in John 5. He says, I can do nothing on my own. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just because I seek not my own will, but the will of him who sent me. You see, this isn't me and my humanness. And Jesus talks about not my will, but him who sent me. He talks about that in the garden, doesn't he? Before he goes to the cross, he says, you know, it's not my will, but it's your will be done. This isn't going to be fun to go to the cross, but this is why I've come, to do your will. And this is what he's saying. He's saying, this is why I'm going to do this, is because it's God's will, because it's going to help people get a glimpse of who I am and why I've come. So Jesus still makes the wine, which is a good thing because it meets an immediate need, but he didn't do it because Mary nagged him, but because it reveals what he's about, the Father's will in the world. And work. And this is important for us because you know what? We as followers of Jesus, we should be about God's will. We should be about doing God's will. We should have this same kind of thrust in our lives as we come. And we want to do God's will in all that we do. So at work, we want to do God's will. At around our home and with even our hobbies, we want to do God's will rather than our own. I don't know about you, that can get hard sometimes, can it? We get caught up in relationships, and maybe we have things, you know, some people get involved in making a political point, and we want to make a political point more than we want to point people to Jesus. Or we want to prove ourselves worthy, or we want to prove ourselves to somebody else, or defend ourselves and show our own worth, rather than point people to God. And we get caught up in that. I know I can do that, and it's very easy to get caught up in that. Can it? And we need to remember, we're here to do God's will. Again, one of the things I do is I fish in a fishing club, and you can get caught up in a fishing club because you have tournaments, and you want to do good in the tournament. You want to say, you know, I fish. I want other people to see me as a good fisherman. But one thing that I did early on in my club is I reminded myself, and I remind myself before every tournament, I'm not here to win the tournament. I'm here so people can see Jesus. And I have to set myself to that and set my heart to that before I even get in the situation so that I don't stray from it, so that I can keep that as my purpose. And everything else that follows, that's gravy, but this is why I'm here. What would our lives look different? What would they look like if this was our purpose and if we could do this more consistently as followers of Jesus? Maybe we're at work and we're about God's will. Rather than our own, rather than people getting caught up in one-upsmanship at work, we can say, well, this is about God's will, so this is about encouraging somebody else and saying, you did a good job. You said what? Or when you're with your family and you're not trying to bring up the past, but rather you can forgive each other and these kinds of things, that's being about God's will and what we do. And Jesus was about God's will. And the reason why he was about God's will is because that was another reason why he came. And another thing that he's communicating in this miracle is that I not only came right to where the action is, I'm not only coming to do God's will, but here is God's will, and this is why I'm coming. I am coming to meet a real need. Jesus came to meet a need. Jesus came to finish something or complete something. And Jesus is showing this in this miracle. And this is where it gets really cool as we start to dig into this miracle and what it looks like. You see, Jesus came to accomplish something for us that we could never hope to accomplish for ourselves. And this is why Jesus came, isn't it? And Jesus announces this in this miracle. Do you know how he announces this? Let's dig into what this picture is. So Jesus is there, and Mary says, do whatever he tells you to do. And it says, well, there were these six jars, and they were used for the purification rites. Okay, and they were about 20 to 30 gallons. Now let's dig into what these purification rites are. Remember when we went through Exodus and we were talking about the tabernacle? And we talked about the priest, and before the priest could go into the tent, there was this water basin, remember? And what this water basin was that they had to wash themselves and cleanse themselves so that they could be presentable to God. They had to purify themselves. Well, Jewish law had all kinds of rules, and there were many ways that you could find yourself unclean and in need of purification. It could be that you did a particular sin. It could be that you touched a dead body. For a woman, it could be as simple as your monthly time makes you unclean. And because you're unclean, you can't present yourself to God, so you need to be cleansed or purified. So they would have these jars that would be filled with water, and at these times where they needed to purify themselves, instead of having to go down to the sea or down to the river, they could go and dip into the jar and they could purify themselves so that they could be presentable to God. And when they were presentable to God, then that was good and they could go. But then they would go out from there, and inevitably the next day or maybe even the next hour, they would find themselves unclean again and they need to purify themselves again. That's why they had the jars around them. They were handy because they had to keep doing that. Jesus takes these jars and he says, we're using them. Fill them with water. What does Jesus do? Instead of water being in there, there is wine. Now, a little bit later in our service, we're going to be celebrating communion. So get this picture. Jesus, when he's celebrating communion, he's in the upper room with the disciples before he goes to the cross, and he's reminding them or giving them a picture of what he's doing in sacrifice himself. And he says, this bread, it represents my body or my life, which is given for you. Take, do this in remembrance of me. Then he takes the cup, and he says, this cup, this wine. Now, we have grape juice, but Jesus took the cup, and there was wine in there. He said, this wine represents my blood, which is given to you for the forgiveness of your sins. You see, the whole idea of blood for the Jews, it was important because you had this sacrificial system, right? And when you would sacrifice an animal, its blood would cover sin. It would cleanse. But then when you sinned again, you'd have to give another sacrifice. But when Jesus comes, he comes to complete that circle because he's going to shed his blood once and for all, or he's going to be the final and complete sacrifice that will purify for all time. So these jugs that are used for purification over and over again and never can really get totally clean because you have to keep doing it again, Jesus said, once and for all, we're putting my wine in there. You get it? It's a picture. And through this picture, Jesus is saying, I'm the final sacrifice. I have come, to give this full and final sacrifice for sin, a perfect cleansing or purification. Here's what the writer of Hebrews says about this. For the sprinkling of defiled persons or unclean persons with the blood of goats and bulls and with the ashes of heifer sacrifices for the purification of the flesh, just like this water would do, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, purify our conscience from dead works to serve the living God. God. You see, the wine Jesus offers, the wine Jesus presents, is presented to complete this work of making us presentable to God always, to finish the work. So in this miracle, Jesus is saying, this is me. I've come to give this to you. Nothing more is needed. Isn't that a wild picture? Give you chills. So Jesus is saying, I'm the ultimate sacrifice. And again, this should be forefront in us as followers of Jesus. This is the need. This is the need that we're communicating. We want to draw people to Jesus, is so that they can know that this is the work that Jesus completes. It's not about just making us happy or making us, you know, scratching an itch or anything about that. We have a need for forgiveness. And it's only through Jesus. As John the Baptist said, behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. It's no coincidence that Jesus attends a wedding, and when he comes, he will come again. And you know what's going to be when Jesus comes again? A wedding feast. What's it called? The marriage supper of the Lamb. Who's the Lamb? The ultimate sacrifice given once and for all. Jesus is giving us a picture here. And he's saying, this need I'm coming to meet. Not just the need for wine, the need for forgiveness, purification. That's why I'm using these jugs. So he announces this. And this is what we should be about as his followers. This is why he came. It's why we share him much better when we keep this central. You know, and this is what Jesus does for us. You know, we have these commercials about Jesus on right now, and you're just like, oh, the lonely, he gets us. Well, that's great that Jesus gets us, but that's not why he came. Wasn't to just get us. And while that's true, that's not the best part. The best part is that he does for us what we could never do for ourselves. He forgives us. That's what I want to see one of those commercials say. Jesus, he forgives us. Really forgives us. And that's why he's come. And this is awesome, isn't it? But Jesus has one more bomb to drop here in this miracle, real quick as we kind of get ready to close. You know, this miracle that announces his arrival, and it's about this wine that Jesus makes from water, right? You see, Jesus could have just made wine. Could have made it serviceable. It could have been ordinary wine, and everybody would have been like, wow, good, we're saved, we can finish the party, and it works, it's wine. You know, Jesus did for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. It's passable, we're good. But Jesus didn't do that, did he? He didn't just provide for the guests what they need. Rather, he did more than that. The wine that Jesus gave was the best wine. You see, Jesus came to do more than just save us. He did more than just rescue us from an eternity in hell. He did more than just guarantee us eternal life with God, which is good. But we're sitting there going, oh, I can't wait for that. You know what Jesus did? Jesus did better than that. He came to give us life right here and now. And through this miracle, here's what Jesus announces, that he came to not only meet a need, but to make everything better. Jesus made everything about this wedding feast by making this wine he made better. Think about this. The hosts were embarrassed, and they're like, whoa. Now all of a sudden it's the best wine. Now all of a sudden they're like, yeah. These wine servants who are going and serving the wine, and people are just grabbing it and saying, I just want this wine. And they're probably feeling like, what are we going to do? We're really going to get abused now. Now they can proudly take this wine. It says, when the wine master tasted it, he says, I don't know where this came from, but they did. And they're like, ha-ha, now I have a purpose to my life. And look at this. Then they had this wine. Think of how this party ramped up with this new wine that he gave, and it got better. And there was more energy, and they're like, wow, look at all this wine we have, and it's fantastic wine, and we can enjoy this wedding feast. And it just got better. It got better because Jesus is here. Boy, isn't that a great truth for a wedding? You know, a marriage gets better when we have Jesus there. But because Jesus is there, everything is better. Why? Because he came to make everything better. You know, often followers of Jesus today, Christians, are kind of take on, and it's sometimes rightly so, kind of takes on the idea that, oh, Christians are just a bunch of wet blankets. You know, they're the no fun people. Every time something happens in society, they're there to say, hey, you better not get out of line, you know, or you better not do that. And in fact, that was much like what the religious circles were in the days Jesus came, isn't it? The religious leaders, they were so caught up in rule keeping and doing things right that they were weighed down by them. They had no joy. They're just sitting there saying, you better make sure you're doing that right. Hey, you better do that. Look how they looked at Jesus. They're trying to pick Jesus apart for every little thing he did rather than realize, wow, look what he's doing. Why? Because they're joyless and they're sitting there miserable. Those that know Jesus, we should be the most joyful people around. We should be the only people that have joy in our world. Why? Because he makes things better. He gives us joy and peace and hope in everything we do. In fact, here's what Jesus said. He said, I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. You know, this idea of abundantly doesn't mean just like we're going to have more possessions or things like that. We're going to have real joy and peace and hope that no one else around us can possibly understand because it's only Jesus who gives us. He came to give us this joy and this hope and peace that surpasses all understanding in any circumstance we face. And through this miracle, Jesus made everything better wherever he was. The party was better, the guests were more joyful, the hosts more thankful, the wine stores happier in serving this good wine, and they served better. Jesus changed the entire mood of the party. Jesus came to change our life right here and now. Not only our eternal destiny. He came to change the way we live life so that when we go through things that our neighbors go through and we go through trials and struggles and things that don't seem fair, we can go through them differently. Why? Because Jesus makes everything better. Because it's going to be okay. Because God is with us. And so that when we follow him, we should do that. This should be kind of the aroma that we leave behind us wherever we go as followers of Jesus. In fact, Jesus in Matthew said, you are the salt of the earth. You know what salt does? Salt seasons. Makes people thirsty. It makes things better. If you ever had potato chips without salt, it's no fun, is it? Salt makes things better. And Jesus is saying, we're that. We should make things better. We should make our society better. We should make our town better. How do we do that? Well, we have joy. We have hope. We have a purpose, which is to do God's will and to draw other people to him and to meet people where they are, just like Jesus. And because of that, we can make things better instead of getting in this tit for tat that we see in political circles or on social media and one-upsmanship, and you did this to me, I'm going to do it just back to you. We can say, no, Jesus makes it better that we don't have to do this. What did Jesus say? Turn the other cheek. Oh, you mean I can just forgive you then? Even if you don't ask for it, I can still forgive you. In fact, if I do something wrong, I can ask for your forgiveness. I don't have to live proud and protecting myself because Jesus gives me what I need. How would that make our world different? How would that make your friendships different? How would that make your workplace different? If we were truly reflecting Jesus in all that we did and we're looking to encourage people and lift up people. Again, we don't have to accept sin, but we can still reflect Jesus and value people. And again, what a difference that could make. So that we're not doing this, we patiently reflect Jesus and we invite others to come and see what we found in Jesus. You see, Jesus came to make everything better. So as we bring all this together, I want to leave you with this. And this is kind of the first miracle of Jesus in a nutshell. And here it is. Jesus didn't just turn water into wine. He announced his presence. That's what this miracle is about. It's not just about turning water into wine or some party trick, and a magician can do that, you know? I went this weekend, I looked on YouTube, and they had all these experiments you could do to show people, look how it turns, this water can turn red and look like, it's not a trick. This is more than a trick, and it's more than just Jesus turning water into wine. It's an announcement. It's a picture. It's a sign, as John says. Jesus is announcing his presence and saying, this is why I have come. I have come to meet you right where you are. And in doing that, I'm here to do the will of my Father, which is to help meet a need that you can't possibly meet on your own, to make you presentable. To not only make you presentable to God, but to make your life better right here and now as well. Because that is why I've come. This is Jesus, fully God, fully man, as he enters this scene through this first miracle. It's pretty cool, isn't it? Next week, John has quite a different story for Jesus as we go further. But just rest in this morning as we continue to worship, and then we're going to come to God's table, and we're going to remember this about Jesus. And we can have this as a picture of why Jesus has come for us, and that we can live that this week, reflecting it in our world. Let's pray.